Thank you. Well, we were told to, or asked to make this personal, so this time it's personal. Hopefully, meaningful as well. So, my fourth gift is a garden planted in a wilderness. Could you work there? I was born in industrial North Lancashire in a small mill town called Darwen on the edge of the moors. The town was dominated by cotton weaving sheds and the ubiquitous black chimneys. It was cold, murky, damp and soot-stained. The north wind came down off the moors like a demon and roared down the chimney right into my bedroom. A coal fire in the grate did little to lessen the cold. About a mile away, we had an allotment. I think people still have allotments, although I haven't personally seen one for a long time, but they probably do exist. And my dad grew potatoes and turnips on it. None of the old fancy vegetables were good working class ones. My leisure hours were given to riding my bike very fast through the puddles in the dirt roads and frightening the girl who lived a few doors up from us by pretending to be bandits. There wasn't much in the way of culture at all. The nearest I came to culture was the BBC and the serials, the radio serials, that were broadcast most evenings. We did have a few books, cookery books mainly, encyclopedias, household repair books, and children's adventure stories. That's mostly what I remember. A couple of Dickens' novels, I think, somehow got in there. Probably my mistake. I think I would have no hesitation in calling it a wilderness. It supported life in the sense of providing food, basic education, medical treatment, and opportunities for some sort of social life. Films and football and bingo. I don't know if they had bingo that far back. But some kind of social entertainment. But there it stopped. Life was extremely circumscribed. It was really little more than survival. One wasn't encouraged to step outside the norm of one's class. But still it was life. And it was human life. That world might be called the human wilderness, because it's more than just a wild state in which every man fights for his own survival and his family's. It involves certain rights as well as social cooperation. But I think a wilderness, nevertheless, in terms of the wider vision of human life. But what about the natural wilderness? What are its characteristics? Well, for a start, it's untamed. It's not controlled in any way by man. Historically, it's the home of dark gods and goddesses who have power over the earth and its fruitfulness. And everything we depend on comes from them, traditionally. So they had to be propitiated with rites and sacrifices. Sometimes, sacrifice of humans. So there are dangers in this wilderness. Wild animals, wild forces of nature, earthquakes, volcanoes, storms, complete collapse of the natural environment in some cases. Its unpredictable, rampant energy is characterized by conflict and the need to survive at all costs. Nevertheless, I have to admit that I do like wildernesses. I like the fact that man has not put his finger on the scales to produce some planned outcome suited to his own tastes. Because I think we need the sense of other that the wilderness shows us. Because it shows us where we fit into the greater picture. The transhuman picture, the transcendental picture even, the universal picture. There are some things that we don't, can't understand, can't even know about. We're not the masters of the universe, let alone the captains of our soul. And yet the wilderness by itself is rather pointless. It feels incomplete. Energy without direction. Growth without cooperation. A garden, on the other hand, is an artifact. It is something formed by man's intelligence and aesthetic. It is carefully trained and restrained. The things we like, we encourage to grow. The things we don't like, which we call weeds, are strongly discouraged. So it's a place of relative order, where beauty is the deciding principle. But the thing about the gardens is they need work. They need constant work to keep the order orderly. Because there is always a tendency towards disorder. Rampant individual energy, as gardeners know only too well. Beautiful as the garden is, it doesn't grow out of nothing. It grows out of the natural wilderness, of course. One, in the past, there weren't gardens at all. There was just wilderness. Uncontrolled proliferation of life forms. Out of the fundamental energy of sunlight and chemistry, under the influence of a sense of order, even if we didn't directly perceive it. You could say, then, that the garden is a higher level of development than the wilderness, because it exhibits a greater degree of order, even perhaps harmony. And yet the garden is dependent upon the energy and diversity of the wilderness in order to exist at all. We must remember that in ancient times all plants were wild, not selected by man to suit his needs and predilections. So there is this mutual dependency, if you like, between these two states, the wilderness and the garden. The garden represents culture, which one could say is the intermediate level between the wilderness and the spiritual realm, using a certain kind of metaphorical language. But culture depends on the presence of the right nutrients as well as cooperation and self-restraint. Similarly, wilderness without the garden seems pointless. Energy without purpose. And energy without purpose or guidance turns upon itself in frustration and destroys itself. But now, I think back to that allotment that my dad worked on through those seemingly endless summer evenings of childhood, my childhood. Certainly it was in part a wilderness, but more. It was something worked on, something he worked on. Feeling and energy went into it. It was a kind of completion of the wilderness, or partial completion. And maybe working in it, caring for it, made us more human, more complete in return. As does caring for anything living. We are cared for in a particular kind of way by the act of caring for others. So this garden, this transition place between wilderness and order, if you like, was also the place where I dreamed, because I was a very young little human being then. I built space rockets underneath the old apple tree, and piloted lone voyages to infinity and beyond. I landed on alien worlds, battled with aliens, invented languages for them, even wrote books about them. So the garden for me was both a place of recreation and imagination, both sustenance and transformation, all essential ingredients in human evolution. So you see now there's this kind of symbiosis going on, where there's the garden is implied by the wilderness, because the wilderness in a way is unfinished necessarily, and the wilderness is required by the garden. You could have a wilderness without the garden, but it would be incomplete. You could not have a garden without the wilderness, just as you can't have a child without the mother. In the end, all these images are metaphors. Now, my original version of this talk lasted about 50 minutes, and 40 minutes of it was going on about metaphors, which I could do, but I won't. You'll be relieved to hear. Metaphors reveal an aspect of reality that the rational mind on its own can't grasp. And because of that, they should not be explained. I think in a lot of people there is a tendency not to really believe in the metaphor. Therefore they spend a lot of time explaining what it means. But a metaphor is not... There's no substitute for a metaphor. It can't be explained because they are worlds in themselves. So the wilderness is a metaphor. It is a world in itself. The garden, similarly, is a metaphor. They're not just diagrams of theoretical concepts. They are actual worlds in themselves. And we relate to the metaphor through the imagination. So the point about the metaphor is they embody an aspect of reality. An explanation doesn't do that. It reduces rather than embodies. So we shouldn't shortchange ourselves by settling for an explanation. We should instead cultivate the real garden for our imaginations to wander in. But there's a final question in this poem. Sangharakshita asks us, could you work there? Could you work in this garden? That's an extremely important question that we should give serious thought to, because the answer isn't obvious. We like to think maybe we could work in it, but then we're not just being offered any old common our garden to wander blissfully in all day long. We're being offered a magic garden, and we'll be required to work in it. We may think that's easy to do that work, but people have spent their entire lives struggling to work in that garden and failing because they've gone about it in entirely the wrong way, using the wrong tools or with the wrong attitude. Because the work we are required to do in this garden is the work of integrating our energies, transforming negative habitual thought into positive thought, creative thought, accepting that whatever we do, we're not going to survive this life. No matter how good we are, we're going to die. It's all going to end. So in a sense, all your efforts are completely wasted. You won't survive. Because, of course, as we're endlessly told by the Dharma, there is no one to survive. There's nobody there. There's nobody here. And it's also the work of creating rebirth on a higher level of vision, with a radically new perspective on ourselves. So here we are. The work consists... We think we like gardens and we like wandering in them. We like smelling the scents and looking at the beauty. But the work is what's important. It's no good having beauty around you if you don't work. And the work is absolutely crucial. And it's the work of integration and positive emotion, spiritual death, and all the rest of it. So we better really think about that question deeply and long, because a great deal hangs on it. Gardens don't grow on trees. They have to be constantly worked on, otherwise they will revert to the wilderness. And it may be a barren wilderness, where it may take many more generations before the right conditions make it fruitful again. Thank you.